There's a community of more than 4,000 people that sits barely 2 miles away from Kansas City's downtown. This community has its own downtown, its own mayor and city agencies, its own major hospital, and it's more than a century old. North Kansas City, all 4-plus square miles of it, remains faithfully independent of its surroundings. I'm Monroe Dodd, and on today's Central Standard, we'll find out about this one-time company town, North Kansas City, who started it, its role in the life of the metropolitan area, and the influence that this small community has beyond its borders. That's all ahead on Central Standard, after the news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. There's a little town in our big metropolis, a little more than 4 square miles in area with about 4,000 residents, and it sits only a few minutes' drive from the Power and Light District, from Union Station and Crown Center. More than 25,000 people work there. Considering that Kansas City has annexed seemingly everything in Missouri for miles and miles around, the existence of this town seems unlikely, but not when you think about that big part of the world that lies north of the Missouri River. Then you can consider the existence of North Kansas City, Missouri, all 4.3 square miles of it, just east of downtown airport, incorporated and set in place long before the city of Kansas City began annexing big chunks of Clay and Platte counties. North Kansas City began life as a company town. It owes much of its existence to a bridge across the Big Muddy, and it's a town that's been perking along for more than a century. Welcome to today's look at the history of North Kansas City, and welcome to our guests, Gus Limekuller and Jeff Samborski. Gus Limekuller, you were born in Kansas City, in North Kansas City, and for 45 years you taught at North Kansas City High School. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Jeff Samborski, you're a former economic developer of North Kansas City and have lived and worked there for a quarter century.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to the show. The idea of a North Kansas City, well, this started much farther back than 100 years. It started in the 19th century as in the brain of a guy named Willard Winter. Who was he?
Well, Willard Winter was an aspiring developer, and his holdings went both north and south of the river. But he started doing a lot of things before the turn of the century. In fact, he started building the ASB Bridge long before anybody was wondering about how they were going to get across there and so forth as a commuter bridge, that is. There was a railroad bridge.
But we're in the 1880s here? That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, there's a winter road that goes toward Independence, and I think it was marked by an interurban line that Willard Winter built. He had interest all over the place, huh?
That's correct.
Okay, yes, that interurban line went clear up to St. Joe.
Okay, and the interurban line to Independence was, I think, out to an amusement park out there. Now, Willard Winter had this idea to bridge the Missouri. At that time, in the 1880s, I believe there was only one bridge across the river, and it was the Hannibal Bridge.
Yes.
And it carried trains, but not much else. Is that correct?
Right.
From time to time, I think people took their chances going across the bridge. I've heard stories about that, and it's kind of interesting. They would just sometimes they would see the train lights coming, and they would know to go a little faster. But, yes, it was mainly for rail traffic.
Kind of hard to visualize today. There's so many ways to get to the Northland just from downtown, the Broadway Bridge, the Heart of America Bridge, I-35 and 29, there's 435, 291, all these bridges across the Missouri. But at the time, if you wanted to walk across there, you took your chances against a steam locomotive, or you could take a ferry. Tell us about those ferries that operated back then.
Well, one that I remember more about was the Annie Cade.
Mm-hmm.
There were several, quite a few, but she was the one that I remember so much because my grandparents would take merchandise or fruits and vegetables to the city market on Saturdays. And that's the one that they used from the north side of the river to over to the south side. And the Annie Cade had quite a reputation. And my I remember my grandparents used to tell about all the people that would be on that when they went over. My grandmother would get up in the morning and pick a lot of fruits and vegetables, whatever, butter, eggs, and go to the market. And I think in my book, I never identified him. My editor didn't really want me to name names, but my grandfather was sort of a noted drinker. And he got in several scraps riding the ferry back and forth. And one time I remember my grandmother was telling me that he got in a fight with some fella. I think they were both pretty well inebriated. And when came over to the north side, they were still fighting. She got off, took everything, got in the car, and went home. And the fight lasted a couple of times around. I always wondered if he had to pay for, you know, the round trip.
He can fight forever across Missouri River.
He could.
But there was no North Kansas City to go to back then. What was there on the north side of the river in those days?
Well, Mr. Winter built a hotel down on Swift. Mm-hmm. At, what was it, 13th?
Palmer House.
The Palmer House. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a place to go in those days. And,
but even before that, I believe, there was a little community called Harlem.
Harlem, oh, yes.
It was on the other side of the river. It had Dutch or Founders or something named after the city in the...
Yes, yes. And I remember when I was researching the book, some of the accounts I found of early settlers coming there on a steamboat up from St. Louis and staying there before Harlem became Harlem. And literally camped there for weeks and months. I remember somebody was telling me about they would put hammocks when the river got high. They'd get a hammock and put up and sleep in the up in the trees. And I just wish I had more information about that period of time there, because I know it would have been very interesting for the people that stayed there.
So back in the late 19th century, there was a community called Harlem, and then there was Liberty, of course, which had been around since the 1820s. But really, most of Clay County was rural and agricultural, and the people who were crossing the river were farmers taking their goods?
Yes. And then they would go up. So many of them lived up by Gashlin, Linden, up North Oak now, wasn't North Oak. But the biggest road up there was Old Pike Road. And it went north from the river. I don't know how far it went, but one of my jobs my grandfather had was to plow or to keep that road, keep the ruts down when it'd get rainy, and they couldn't get their wagons. So one of his big jobs was to take a team of horses and drag that Old Pike Road from the river almost up to Gashlin.
Then along comes Willard Winter, who has the idea not only to build a bridge, but to start a community there. What happens to his idea?
Well, I don't know.
Well, I think like a lot of developments, you always have high aspirations and then reality sets in. And I think he overextended himself. He had thousands and thousands of acres in the Northland. And as I mentioned, south, he was doing some things. And I think his vision was a good vision, but it just wasn't right. Maybe he was before his time. And then there was a lot of interest that came in, the railroads and other types of industry that felt as though this was a good place for them to set up. And so you never know all the details, but I think as the story goes, he just went bankrupt.
In a nutshell, what would you say his vision was for the Northland?
Well, I think he looked at things in a holistic. So he was trying to build a community. He didn't have a singular type of objective. He was he laid out a lot of the parcels in North Kansas City. So he had some ideas of planning an entire community, and so. Again, he was a visionary, but again, he didn't have the resources that some of the later people and governments who came along after his arrival.
I think he had trouble getting people interested in that part of the land.
Wow.
To get some backers.
Uh-huh.
He could just do so much himself. And
There's pictures in your book of piers having been built of this ASB bridge, but then construction just stopped.
Yes.
And that is as far as Willard Winter got.
Yeah.
And then who came along to finish the job? Tell us about that.
Well, ASB, the Armour, Swift, and Burlington Corporation, they set up a conglomeration. And at that time, the Armour and Swift meat companies were mm-hmm. in Kansas City, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And the Burlington Northern, or the Burlington at that time, had aspirations of really capitalizing on the meat industry. So they formed a conglomeration, which I understand that it was so strong that some federal antitrust legislation came in and kind of held it back. Also about that same time, Kansas City, Kansas was becoming very concerned. They heard that the news that a lot of their industry was going to be coming to North Kansas City, and that may be the start of the first economic development border war that continues on today.
Yeah.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. Our topic is North Kansas City, and our guests are Gus Limekuhler and Jeff Samborski. Armour and Swift were meat packers. They never built a meat plant in North Kansas City after all. Burlington was a railroad that was going to carry their products, and Burlington did get quite a bit done in North Kansas City. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what was Burlington's influence then when they took over and kept the thing going?
Well, Jeff, I don't...
Well, I guess to go back to the Burlington's interest, they had already established rail lines along the river and up through Chillicothe. The Hannibal Bridge was in place. So that was really the ASB Bridge became the access to the west across the Missouri River. So Burlington had a very powerful position for industry and commerce at that point. And the they kept expanding. In fact, today, the Burlington Northern is probably, I believe, the largest single landowner in North Kansas City to this day.
Mm-hmm. Well, did these interest these two meatpackers, Armour and Swift, and the railroad Burlington? They incorporated a town and laid it out themselves, didn't they, in the early 1900s, Gus?
Pretty much. I'm just trying to think. Hannibal Hamlin, I'm trying to think his – I've sort of forgotten his connection. But he was a group of men that did a lot of investing in North Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I knew a little bit about him, his daughter, Mary Hamlin, was a longtime teacher in North Kansas City.
Yeah.
And she was one of my mentors. And she used to tell me about her father and the problems he had. A lot of times he took a lot of guff from Kansas City people who told him he was crazy to try to develop North Kansas City. And I remember her telling me that he was going to do it or else. And, of course, he did.
I know I've learned over the years that there is a certain feeling among Northlanders that the South, the people south of the river don't pay enough attention to them. And this is not anything new based on what you're saying.
Oh, no.
Whether it's still true or not. They laid out a town here then on what was a pretty much a flat area north of the river. Was it protected from floods?
No.
I think 1903 was the – there was a major flood, but there was some levee protection right after then. And then we had a major flood, I know, in 1951 that we did at that point, the city that is, had protection of about a 500-year floodplain. So the city itself has never really been flooded – since that protection of 1903.
Okay.
Although it's come close, but it's been protected those
years.
We
did evacuate the town in 1951.
Oh, really? But it's just lucked out on that one. Now, the ASB Bridge, what year was it finished?
I'd have to look at my
book. Original ASB, I think you were right, around the 1880s.
Well,
so,
the bridge itself wasn't it about 1911 that the bridge was done?
I'm sorry.
Right. And its advantage, unlike the old Hannibal Bridge, was that it had a roadway on either side.
Yes.
And people could take wagons or they could walk. And there was a newfangled invention called the motor car that could cross it, too. And that was the first of its type across the river, which probably made it a lot less crazy to develop the Northland.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also, very shortly, came another kind of transportation that ran right down the middle of the bridge. That was the connection to the streetcar system. Tell us about that, you guys.
The interurban, interurban.
The interurban railway, huh?
Well, it's amazing when every time when I go up north toward Riverside or up that way, and I tell people there's a little level place still on the side of the hill where the streetcars went up the they went even up to St. Joe. And people can't believe that they had that kind of transportation. And it's interesting how that died off. And I guess because of the cars, that people didn't use that as much. But, yeah, there was a there was an interurban line, and I think it went to Excelsior Springs, to Liberty. Excelsior Springs went that direction, and then it went north.
North, as far as St. Joseph, I believe, the Kansas City, Clay County and St. Joseph Railroad. These were electrically powered cars that on lines, and it hooked right into the streetcar system of Kansas City.
Yes.
So for that period in which the motor car was slowly getting popular, these guys could carry you all the way from South Kansas City to St. Joseph if you wanted to go that far. And it ran through across the ASB Bridge. Now, the ASB also was a, was something of an engineering marvel, wasn't it?
I believe so. It was – I'm trying to think –
it had,
I need to go back and read
the Burlington Railroad had, I believe, a lift on the bottom that was considered quite a...
Something different, you knew.
To allow barge traffic to travel underneath it, correct.
And I know that the engineer who designed it had to do some persuading of the investors that it would work.
Yes.
What did he have to do?
I don't know if he had to pay them off or what.
I think he had to build a big model of it, didn't he, to show that the thing could...
Probably. Yeah.
If do you have questions or stories about North Kansas City, you can join our conversation by calling us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And if you want to, you can tweet us. Our handle is KCURCST. The boundaries as originally set out in North Kansas City, and I believe the city, if its centennial was in 2012, then it began in 1912. The boundaries change over the years, or were they set then and good forever?
Well, they haven't. They did not change for probably 100 years. About 2 or 3 years ago, there was a small annexation behind the hospital. And then I'm not sure if they've completed it, but there's discussion of a little annexation for a park, a dog park there. So there's a... Short of a 20, 30 acres, I think the original boundaries still stand as they are today.
Yes, we just made a deal to build a dog park, which, never mind, I won't comment. But it's going along, and we had to make a trade with some land. And then there's a fountain at the end of...
the children's fountain?
Yeah, a children's fountain that's not in North Kansas City. It's in Kansas City, and so many people don't realize it because it's right next door, you know, right across the street. But it's not in North Kansas City.
When these meatpackers and the railroad started North Kansas City, it was by itself surrounded by rural Clay County. And now it's surrounded by Kansas City, Missouri. Is that right?
That's correct. There was a major effort by the city, I want to say in the 50s, to continue annexing up north. And one of the stories was that the city administration at that time wasn't really familiar with how to annex, so they asked Kansas City, Missouri how to annex. And I think they missed some of the public notice by one day, and there is a bugaboo, but if that glitch wouldn't have happened, I think North Kansas City would have extended all the way up by Vivian Road and further north. There was some dissension, I think, among people whether or not they wanted to really expand. So Kansas City jumped on the opportunity, and as we know it today, Kansas City, Missouri is expanded quite further north than that.
Did Kansas City, Missouri get the idea from North Kansas City? Is that the suspicion?
Probably so.
You know, and it's so confusing. So many people still have problems where they live. They come moving over north, and they don't know if they live in North Kansas City North, or the part of Kansas City that's south of the river. It's really confusing.
But if they live in North Kansas City, they don't pay earnings tax.
No,
is that correct?
We don't.
That's correct.
Now, at one point, North Kansas City also, I believe, contained that spit of land around the curve of the river where somebody wanted to put an airport. Is the downtown, which is now the downtown airport, but for years was Kansas City's municipal air terminal, main airport. Is that part of North Kansas City still, or what happened to it?
Well, we haven't gotten to that, but around the time when the Burlington Northern and the Armour and Swift meat packing companies backed off of their plan, a organization called the North Kansas City Development Company took on those assets. And they, at some point, I don't know the exact date, but they did not include that area within North Kansas City's corporate boundaries. So Kansas City, Missouri, now and since they annexed that area, is under the control of or controls the municipal airport area. So it never was incorporated within North Kansas City's corporate boundaries.
Okay. But it forms the Broadway Bridge and the Broadway Extension are more or less the western boundary of North Kansas City today.
Right.
The eastern boundary of the downtown airport.
Yes.
And how would you describe the northern boundary of North Kansas City?
32nd Street, or basically the power lines that go on the north side of the North Kansas City Hospital and Cerner. So Cerner Corporation is primarily in North Kansas City, and that extends over to the Choteau Traffic Way area.
And it's very confusing up by the hospital because on one side of the street is North Kansas City, and on the other side of the street is Kansas City, Missouri. And it's very confusing for people, you know. A lot of people, when they move over there, they don't know if they're living in Kansas City, Missouri until they get their tax bill or something.
Well, I hope we're removing a little bit of the confusion, at least today. Began as a company town, but it developed into quite a diversified town in terms of industry. What other industries besides railroads came there?
Flour mills, lots of mills. We had how many? Four, five, six?
At least.
Flour mills.
It was a lot of agricultural types of products found a home there with the great rail traffic. So some of the old-timers would say you either worked at the rope factory, at the cornstarch factory, or the mill. And so those were our three main industries. And then soon after that, as building took place, a lot of the construction types of trades, U.S. gypsum, Cook composites and polymers, or Cook paint, a lot of familiar names, Valspar, a lot Pratt and Whitney, you could go on, but a lot of the construction-oriented material suppliers located in North Kansas City.
If you're crossing the river from the south, one of the first things you see on for instance, Interstate 35 of North Kansas City is a heavily industrial area with, I think, isn't that the Cook paint stuff you see on either side of them?
Yes.
So that National Starch.
So the lots of paints and starches and starch was being produced right there in North Kansas City, and yet it has 4,300 or so residents. Where do people live in North Kansas City?
Well, they live in some of the new developments. There was Sunny Hills, which was a big development east over by the hospital, and now we have City View. They just opened, I think, 75 new apartments. Just north of, it's on Swift Street, Swift Avenue. And going back, a lot of car dealers, Pitts Pratt, there was
Shepherd Motors.
Shepherds, what was the Ford?
Hessian Motors, I think.
And before Bill Woods, there was, I can't remember now who started that. And then at one time, people don't believe this, but at one time there were four major grocery stores in North Kansas City, A&P, Kroger's, Jack Street's, and I can't remember the fourth one, but four big grocery, and they were big grocery stores, and now we have one.
Small.
So it was you had cradle-to-grave coverage in North Kansas City. You could get cars and food and everything else, and now you kind of have to cross some boundaries to come up with those.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Now, some of the streets you've been naming off are some of the names of the original things. Investors. You mentioned Armour and Swift. Armour is one of the main drags through downtown, and there's Burlington. All of these are in the industrial kind of warehouse area there.
Yes. And see, when they laid out the city, they started with the alphabet. And there's Buchanan, Clay, and I don't know what was originally Swift. Then we have Erie, Fayette, Iron, Gentry, Howell.
Right. Running from west to east. You start with Atlantic Street,
Atlantic,
then Burlington, and then you can just go. So if you ever get lost in North Kansas City, you can remember that, and you can probably help get yourself realigned.
Gus, you grew up in North Kansas City. As a kid, you grew up in an apartment building, was that right?
My Aunt Emma Woodis was my mother's sister, and she was a little crippled lady. Blind in one eye, and she fell when she was young and had a lot of health problems, but she had the determination I can't even begin to tell you. She ran a two-story apartment. Well, it was really well, there were two apartments, but there were just rooms. And when I tell the house where I was born is still standing in North Kansas City. Merle Walker bought two of the buildings on Swift, moved them over east, and he made them into rental properties. Mm-hmm. But the house I was born in was 2024 Swift. There were four rooms on the second floor, and some rooms had two people. There were two secretaries that worked down at the car dealership down on Swift. But when I tell people, when I go by that house and tell them that at one time there were probably 16, 18 people living in that house, and no one thought anything about it. My aunt and her husband lived in the basement. They had a living room, dining room, kitchen. Then they go back a ways, and here was the furnace and the coal, where the coal bin was. And then my mother and dad had an apartment on the first floor, and there was an apartment behind them. Then the four rooms upstairs and one bathroom.
Oh, my goodness. And you mentioned that some of your neighbors worked over at the racetrack in Riverside.
Oh, yes, yes.
What were they?
My aunt kept jockeys. There were a lot of jockeys that would come in, and it got so that she almost always had one or two jockeys staying there.
Yeah, okay. And that racetrack in Riverside was just right next door to North Kansas City, and notorious as being the racetrack where boss Tom Pendergast bet and lost a lot of money. Well, we'll be back after the break to talk more about the century-old city on the north bank of the Missouri River. You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. A bit more than a century ago, developers began a bridge across the Missouri River and laid out a town at the north end of it. With that, people could go over the river by way of those new automobiles and soon streetcars, too. The bridge was the ASB, and the town was called North Kansas City. With us today to talk about the history of their city are Gus Limekuhler, a historian, author, and longtime student of North Kansas City history, in addition to being a longtime teacher at North Kansas City High School, and Jeff Samborski, a resident of North Kansas City and a former economic development director for the city. Guys, North Kansas City began as a company town. It had a chance to have sort of an integrated beginning, unlike a lot of cities. Did it have utilities and other stuff kind of springing full-blown at the beginning of its life?
Yes, that's one of the unique aspects of North Kansas City. In most cities, you usually start with a population, and later comes a lot of those utilities. Well, North Kansas City was well-planned. In fact, they brought down some of the expert planners from Chicago, New York, and they really wanted to do it right and create a full-service community. And in doing so, they started their own water plant, which the city still has its own water treatment and center. They also had utilities, which KCP&L eventually took over, but they actually had their own utility, electric utility company, and, of course, streets and you name it.
Quite noticeable to those of us who don't live in North Kansas City is driving through on Armor. The downtown is brick, and the buildings are kind of architecturally integrated, sort of the way the Country Club Plaza is. Who was responsible for that downtown, and how did it come to be?
Well, again, a lot of those buildings were built in the 1920s when the North Kansas City Development Company took over the reins, and they were bringing, again, people from Chicago and expert planners. So I don't know exactly when the Country Club Plaza came around, but I think it's
it began,
about the same time. So I don't know who was taking a cue from who, but they both sound like they understood that the design characteristics of zero setbacks and so forth was the way to go.
I see. And the downtown has been preserved pretty well over the years. Has it needed refurbishment? Or?
Well, in the early 80s, the North Kansas City Development Company did take on a redevelopment of some of those areas. Actually, before that, they put on some skins trying to modernize, and then they came back and ripped all that off because it really was fake facades. So they went back to the original characteristics, which I think people enjoy. And then the city has, over the years, the city imposed some design guidelines. For instance, when the new drugstore there, Osco CVS now, wanted to rebuild, they were wanting to put the parking up front, but the city said, no, we like the zero setback, the downtown vibrancy that the storefronts provide. So the city required them to build up front, and I think they're happy how that worked as well.
And playing by the rules. Do you have questions or stories of your own about North Kansas City? You can join the conversation by calling us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us. Our handle is KCURCST. North Kansas City High School, Gus, you taught at. And it is part of the North Kansas City School District, but the North Kansas City School District's boundaries go far beyond?
Yes,
how far do they go?
Out to Kansas City, Missouri, which is very confusing because people don't know if their kids are going to school in Kansas City, Missouri or North Kansas City. But back to North Kansas City, the early development, it's always interesting to tell people that down on 21st, 22nd, 23rd, along in there, those houses were built without indoor plumbing.
Oh.
And people still can't believe that people shared outdoor facilities behind the houses. And I talked, when I was interviewing for the book, I talked to some little lady who had lived there that long when they went outside to use the bathroom. And that I didn't realize that. But she said that people down in there on 21st, 22nd, 23rd, built those houses without the plumbing.
And so this was the very old kind of outhouse where you dug a hole in the ground.
Yes, and they shared, which is interesting. They shared. People around there shared, which always just threw me for a loop. I could hardly believe that.
This is the 1910s, the 19-teens?
1920s.
As late as the 1920s,
yes.
People were using outhouses.
Yes.
So it's not always pleasant to think about sewer systems, but it certainly is necessary. Those must not have come along then until the late 20s or the 30s.
Yes.
In
yes.
North Kansas City.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, we have a caller here. Let's go to Eric, who's from North Kansas City. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you?
Just fine.
I'm a North Kansas City High School alumni, and there was a rock wall that was built around the high school. And I had heard that it was built from the Roosevelt efforts of the CCC, and I was wondering if you could talk about the age and when was it built, fabrication, what materials, and if you could discuss that a little bit, that'd be very interesting.
It was the WPA in 1937 that built the wall around the high school.
The Works Progress Administration, Works Projects
That's
Administration
right.
of the New Deal that built the wall around the high school, and it's still there.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. It's a very nice. So it's the WCA that built that. Interesting.
And the city used money that it received from Harrah's to totally renovate that wall about several years ago.
Fantastic.
All right, Eric. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let's go now to Martha in North Kansas City. Good morning, Martha, and welcome.
Good morning. I'm a longtime resident of North Kansas City, and I remember when it was a thriving community with dime stores and shoe stores, clothing stores, a penny store, quite active downtown area. And then, of course, with the development north of us, all disappeared. And now it's mostly service area, but it's still a beautiful place to live. I've lived here for over 70 years, was a student of Gus Slime Coolers, and he's pretty much the heart of this city.
Well, good for you, Gus. Martha, thank you very much. Thanks for your call. I'm sure Gus thanks you a lot for the compliment. Okay, let's go now to Mike in Warrensburg. Good morning, Mike, and welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, I'm on the road coming out of Warrensburg. I just wanted to say North Kansas City is defined by its city limits, but the community is north of the river, Kansas City North, North Kansas City School District, Southern Flat, Riverside, Northmore, areas like that.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Mike, for your call.
You're welcome.
All right. Speaking of the school district, just a second, how is it that school districts can begin life as a North Kansas City school district as in North Kansas City and then annex in places where cities can't? Is it a peculiarity of Missouri law, Gus?
You know, I don't really know that. It's just, it was...
Well, they didn't have any competition, that's for sure. They were the only North Kansas City school district. They just celebrated their 100-year anniversary, by the way, and they were incorporated right after the city was incorporated. Yes. So that's where their name came from, and that was their first location to teach. But obviously, as things expanded north, they were the district, and they were there and able to continue. So there's been clamoring over the years that maybe they should change their name to not be confused with Kansas City, Missouri School District or others. But when the research comes back, everybody feels that North Kansas City really espouses that name, espouses some of the characteristics that they like, and so they've kept it.
But it is confusing because people who live in Kansas City North, their kids go to North Kansas City High School, and it is it's confusing.
The district has other high schools too, doesn't it?
Yes, Staley Farms,
Staley.
Winnetonka, Oak Park, those are the main high schools.
Yeah.
And, of course, Staley Farms is up 120th Street or up almost to Smithville, quite frankly. So,
far from the city. But when you hear about Winnetonka playing Oak Park or something like that in high school football, you're talking about North Kansas City school district teams, even though the schools aren't in the city. you mentioned the flood of 1951, that there was an evacuation. But, Gus, you would remember this.
Well,
I
had just married in 1950, and my wife, we didn't have much furniture, but my uncle had a dump truck, and people were scrambling for people with trucks, some conveyance to get their furniture out of the floodplain. So my wife and I got my uncle to come down with a dump truck, which is pretty high off the ground. I don't know how many of us kept from getting hernias listing all the furniture up there. And then we had no place to store it. Well, I had just started teaching in the North Kansas City School District, and I was at Brookwood School, which was up north. It was one of the first schools in the North Kansas City District. In fact, it was annexed by the North Kansas City District. So we took them off the furniture. We didn't have much. I think a refrigerator, a stove, a divan, a bed, a couple of chairs. So we took them up to Brookwood School and put them out in the hall, and that's why I was teaching. It was my second year of teaching. Well, the very next day, the principal, who was a friend of mine that had gone to high school with me, Jim Harmon, came and he said, Gus, we might have a little problem. Dorothy Hunt, who was over the elementary and junior high schools, and the superintendent, were coming to visit that day. And here all my furniture was up and down the hall. And I thought, well, what can I do? Well, of course, they got a big, when they walked in and saw this furniture, of course, they wanted to know what was going on. And so luckily they didn't get upset that we'd moved our furniture there for a couple of days. But luckily the flood didn't get into North Kansas City, so we took our furniture back.
Yeah. Now, back in the 1930s, we mentioned Boston Pendergast earlier. There was a bit of a notorious spot called the Cuban Gardens. Is that right?
Yes, right down at the end. And people still don't believe that.
Tell us about it.
It was built down where the dog track, right next to the dog track, and there was a dog.
Where is that today?
The dog track is at, it's at the end of north end of Swift, and it sits down below where the what's the brick building? The company up there. What was it? The big. I can't think of the company that built up above, but there was a dog track. And then next to it was this nightclub, Cuban Gardens.
Nightclub.
And the story I uncovered, and people still are amazed, that Gypsy Rose Lee, in my book I mentioned, she and her mother came to town. They were destitute. And her mother got, Gypsy was, I don't know, 14, 16, 17, very young. And her mother got her a job dancing at the Cuban Gardens. Now, I don't think she stripped in those days. I doubt very much if she did. But that was Gypsy Rose Lee's claim to fame as far as North Kansas City, that she danced in North Kansas City at the Cuban Gardens.
And she became arguably the most the best-known stripper in the United States of America.
And then the I don't know, mafia, whatever it was at that time, got a little out of hand, so they closed the Cuban Gardens. And it's interesting, when I uncovered that information, people still didn't believe me that Gypsy Rose Lee had sung there, that there were gangsters, the early mafia in North Kansas City. And then, of course, they moved over to Riverside and built the racetrack.
Mm-hmm. Which is the place where Pendergast bet and lost a bunch of money.
Yes.
And that racetrack went until, it was 39 or 40 or even past that.
I think past that maybe. I'm not.
It may have been turned into a car track there, towards a racetrack.
Okay. Once more at the Cuban Gardens, you wrote, I believe, that John Lazia, the most notorious organized criminal of the 1930s, who was an ally of Boss Pendergast, ran the Cuban Gardens.
Yes.
But its existence was only for a couple of years.
Yes, it didn't last very long. They were a little too ahead of their time, I think.
Yeah, out of their time. And now there's the city gets quite a bit of revenue from casino operations.
That's correct. I think at one point, half of the city's revenues came from the casinos itself through gaming admission funds that go through the state and get returned to the city. And the city gets a cut of the gross profits and so forth. So.
And we always thank Liz Short, because there was a lot of opposition to Harrah's, ministerial alliance, a lot of the small organizations were very much against it. And I think Liz was smart enough to see that this was money that the city could use, and obviously it's helped out.
Well, I think Mayor Elizabeth Short realized that gaming was coming to the area, and if the city of North Kansas City did not get some kind of income stream, we were going to be dealing with any of the issues that might result anyway, so we may as well, you know, be a player in the in that respect and get some source of income.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd. Do you have any questions or stories about North Kansas City? You can join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Jeff Samborski, you mentioned that the Harrah's revenue at one point made up about a half of North Kansas City's budget. Does it still, or has that fallen off?
I think in general the proceeds have slightly dipped, but I haven't looked at the most recent numbers. But it's still a very substantial portion of the city's revenues, and they're well used. They do a lot of projects in the community. For instance, some of the redevelopment that Gus alluded to, the Northgate Village, and some of those projects never would have been possible if it wasn't for those sources of income. Before Harrah's came in, the city was spending more money than they were taking in, and that changed pretty quickly after we started receiving those funds.
Can I put in a plug for the North Kansas City Hospital?
Sure.
I hope people realize that it's one of the major hospitals in the whole Midwest, and it has just grown. And thanks to the people in North Kansas City who went door to door to collect the money to buy the ground or to get the building started. It's just a major hospital in the area, and I think we have arrangements with KU Med. We have St. Luke's. We have just almost doubled in size over the years.
It's owned by the city of North Kansas City.
Yes, it's owned by the city.
There's been quite a bit of controversy the last couple of years about whether that ownership should continue and should be sold and on. Probably a whole other show, right?
Yeah, a little too much.
But that's interesting. Now, I can't imagine there's many other cities in the area. Well, Kansas City has the Truman Medical Center. But for a city to own a hospital of that caliber and that rank is rather rare, especially a small city.
Yes, it is. It is.
All right, let's go now to the telephones. We have here Gary, who's calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Gary, and welcome to Central Standard.
Say hi, thanks. I was curious to know if either one of your guests knew anything about the prisoner of war camps that were in Riverside during World War II, and I believe they housed mostly Italians.
Okay, we'll ask them about them. Thanks, Gary. Either of you know about the prisoner of war camps in Riverside? Gus?
Yes, yes. And, I don't remember too much about it, but they had prisoners of war there for quite some time, and they were over in Riverside.
Some of my aunts used to say that they would drive down by there, and the prisoners would be looking out, and they would kind of flaunt themselves a little bit and maybe tease them. And I don't know if it was in fun or if it was...
it was scary. I mean, people were, you know, with the war and everything, people were scary to realize they're prisoners right down the road.
Wow. And this guy says they might have been Italian prisoners from the armies of Mussolini.
Yeah.
As opposed to Germans and the others. How interesting. In Kansas City, south of the river, we know that there's a lot of old and outdated sewers and steam lines and infrastructure that for some number of years now has been kind of going bad and has to be replaced. The city of North Kansas City is about a century old now. What kind of infrastructure concerns does it have, or have those arisen yet?
Well, fortunately for the city, Harris money has been used to reline, I believe, all the sewers. So I think we're probably well ahead of some of our neighbors in some of that aging infrastructure. I know that they continually check for infiltration in the sewers and so forth. In other words, they're being very maintenance-oriented and trying to stay ahead of the curve. And in terms of streets, the city has about 200,000 cars go through it each day. So even though it's a small city with a lot of revenue, they do deal with big city problems there, and that requires a adequately staffed and funded police department, fire department, street department, what have you. So, sometimes people get a little jealous of the city's Harris income and so forth, but the city was one of the first cities, as we've talked about today, to be developed, and they have a lot of unique challenges that if they weren't able to take care of those the way they do, I think the whole metropolitan area would suffer because it is an urban area, and we all know if that donut hole collapses, everybody's impacted. So fortunately for the city and for the metropolitan area, the city's well managed and able to accommodate and maintain their services.
Let's go now to Jim in Pleasant Hill. Good morning, Jim.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, sir. I remember Mr. Lime Cooler. I went to North Kansas City in 1965. Then that summer year, I started to work for a private ambulance service in North Kansas City. I think the name of it was Community Ambulance, and it was located at 2110 North Clay. We did a lot of business with the DW Newcomer Funeral Home at, I think, Armor and Knox, I think, was its location. And at some point in time, and I want to say it was in the 80s somewhere, they had a huge fire, and it destroyed that funeral home. And in the process of demolishing it, they had told the public, they'd put out the word that they could help themselves to a piece of North Kansas City if they wanted to by coming by and taking a brick from this funeral home with them. And then people down there like to carry that whole funeral home off a brick at a time. And I thought that was kind of a interesting observation there about how people felt about part of their community.
Well, I don't remember that.
Yeah, you know, North Kansas City, I think people still think of it as their hometown, whether you've left and moved to Smithville, Liberty, what have you. I think the school had a lot to do with that, but also since it was the hub of where people did their business every day or worked, they always they still have that feeling that North Kansas City is their hometown, and that's probably illustrative of what
well,
happened
it's
there.
It's so true at class reunions. I get invited, fortunately, to about 3 or 4 years, having taught there so long.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when people come back from all over the world almost and talk about North Kansas City with still love and appreciation for what they got from being in North Kansas City.
Well, and I think that, you know, the newcomer family provided wonderful service there to a lot of the residents down there. And I don't know, I guess maybe a funeral home where your family had been cared for and things like that would maybe come in second behind the church or something like that, you know. But people felt like they'd lost a big piece of their community when that burnt down.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for your call. And thanks so much, both of you, Jeff Samborski and Gus Limecooler, for being with us today. As I mentioned, Gus is a historian of North Kansas City, a longtime teacher, student of its history, and lover of the place and resident. And Jeff Samborski, former economic development director for the city and also a resident. Thanks, both of you, for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.